Rapid Fire. Centennial. G.I. Bill's legacy, evolution, honored in L.A. World War II veteran William E. Price of American Legion Post 257 in Laguna Woods, California, stepped to the microphone to tell the story of how he went from newly discharged U.S. Army Air Corps electrical mechanic in 1946 to aerospace engineer whose work on the Voyager program still sends data back to Earth from intergalactic space. Recent UCLA graduate and Student Veterans of America member Donnie Stiles, 36, explained how, when he first enlisted in the Marine Corps, I was not mature enough for college. That changed when he got out and realized the opportunity military service had given him. American Legion Department of California Commander Robert Heinisch said education benefits were a driving force behind the decisions of his two sons to serve in the military. Coast Guard Lieutenant Commander Raymond Jackson, who commands Maritime Safety Security Team Los Angeles, Long Beach, described the GI Bill as a tangible way to say thank you for your service. They were among dozens who gathered January 17th to share their experiences at Bob Hope Patriotic Hall, home of Los Angeles County Military and Veterans Services, for the opening of the greatest legislation, an American Legion centennial salute to the GI Bill. The multimedia exhibit at Patriotic Hall through March is on its third stop in a national tour that began last June in New Orleans. American Legion past National Commander David K. Rabine moderated a panel discussion after the opening that covered the evolution of veterans' benefits from the dawn of the American Legion when, according to Dr. Jennifer Keene of Chapman University, a National World War I scholar, they got $60 in separation allowance, they could wear their uniform home, they got train tickets. Veterans almost immediately turned to the new American Legion. The Legion drafted Servicemen's Readjustment Act of 1944, the GI Bill of Rights, revolutionized military service, U.S. economy and culture, and has continued to evolve through the decades. The latest benefits package, the Harry Colmery Veterans Educational Assistance Act of 2017, known as the Forever GI Bill, is named for the Legion past national commander credited as architect of the measure. The American Legion had the right idea, explained John Kamen, an Army veteran of the Iraq War and assistant director for the Legion's Employment and Education Division. College educations and low-interest home loans through the GI Bill literally changed the face of the country. We cannot educate people enough on that, said opening attendee Hugh Crooks, Jr., vice chairman of the California Veterans Board and former American Legion National Executive Committee man. Jeff Stoffer. National Emergency Fund. Rohan to Puerto Rico. Your Legion family cares. Last September, Hurricane Maria devastated Puerto Rico, killing dozens and causing an estimated $100 billion of damage on the already economically challenged island. Unfortunately, we were not able to drive semi-trucks loaded with supplies to Puerto Rico, as we did for the people of Texas and Florida after hurricanes hit those states, National Commander Denise H. Rohan said while touring the American Legion Department of Puerto Rico in January. But the people here are every bit as much a part of the American Legion family, and families take care of each other in time of need. Rohan's visit included Legion posts in Carolina, Arecibo, Camuy, and Adjuntas. She visited staff, volunteers, and patients at the VA community-based outpatient clinic in Ponce, then closed out the week visiting Legion family members in St. Thomas and St. John, islands also hit hard during last fall's hurricane season. I want to know what you need so I can bring your stories to Congress, Rohan told Legionnaires and VA officials. According to National Executive Committee man Angel O. Narvaez, essential supplies were provided by FEMA and other organizations, but people still need to rebuild, which is why it is so important for people to donate to the Legion's National Emergency Fund, he said. Since Hurricane Maria hit, the NEF has awarded more than $61,000 in grants to the department. In addition, $15,000 in American Legion Temporary Financial Assistance, TFA, has been distributed to meet basic needs for children of Legion-eligible veterans, and the Legion's Operation Comfort Warriors program donated $20,000 in gift cards to the region's VA patients during Rohan's visit. Posts and departments have sent funds to Puerto Rico, too. Department donations include Pennsylvania, $50,000, North Carolina, $10,000, and New Jersey, $1,000. Post donations include Florida's Post 57, $4,500, California's Hollywood Post 43, $2,200, and Alaska's Post 27, $2,000. John Rotter. Contribute to the NAF online, legion.org/donate. Watch a video, legion.org/legionTV. Honor and remembrance, World War I centennial coin now available. Sales are open for the 2018 World War I Centennial Silver Dollar, which honors the 100th anniversary of U.S. participation in World War I. On January 17th, retired Army Colonel Gerald York, grandson of famous World War I hero and Legionnaire Sergeant Alvin York, made a ceremonial first purchase of the coin at U.S. Mint headquarters in Washington. He gifted the purchase to the American Legion in a presentation to past National Commander Dan Dellinger. The obverse design of the collectible silver dollar is titled Soldier's Charge and depicts an almost stone-like soldier gripping a rifle. Barbed wire twines are featured in the lower right-hand side of the design. The wire design element continues onto the reverse side in a design titled Poppies in the Wire, which features abstract poppies mixed in with barbed wire. The coin's designer is Leroy Transfield of Orem, Utah, and the sculptor is Donald Eberhardt. The Treasury Secretary selected the winning coin design following an open design competition in 2016. Surcharges from sales of the World War I coin are authorized to be paid to the U.S. Foundation for the commemoration of the World Wars to assist the U.S. World War I Centennial Commission in marking the war's centenary. The commission was authorized by Congress to establish a national World War I memorial at Pershing Park in Washington. The World War I silver dollar will be produced in limited quantities and will be available for purchase online through December 28th. The Mint has also created special companion medals honoring each of the military branches that served in World War I. They are available from the Mint as part of five different World War I silver dollar and medal sets. Catalog.usmint.gov. Honor and remembrance, Gold Star families' monuments multiply. On December 2nd, the community of Hayward, California, dedicated a Gold Star Families Memorial Monument at Lone Tree Cemetery, the 29th nationwide and the first in California and on the West Coast. It was designed by and is the vision of Herschel Woodrow Woody Williams, 94, a life member of American Legion Post 177 in Barbersville, West Virginia. A World War II Marine Corps veteran, he received the Medal of Honor for combat actions during the Battle of Iwo Jima. Nearly 150 people attended the dedication, which was emceed by Michael Emerson, a Marine Corps veteran and American Legion life member. Emerson led the team that collected donations to build the monument. Williams intends to establish at least one Gold Star monument in every state through the Herschel Woody Williams Medal of Honor Foundation. The foundation works with local groups to get monuments developed and built, awards scholarships to eligible Gold Star children, and conducts outreach to increase public awareness of Gold Star families and the monuments. As of January, 30 Gold Star monuments had been dedicated, and 50 more are in development, with footprints in 39 states. Visit www.hwwmohf.org to see a map of monuments. Centennial. Post 54, Freehold, New Jersey. Freehold is the home of Freehold Raceway, the nation's oldest and fastest daytime half-mile harness racing track. Horse races have been taking place there since the 1830s. According to Carl Beams Sr., past commander of American Legion Post 54, the raceway often hosted an American Legion pace in honor of local Legionnaires. Post officers attended and had their photographs taken in the winner's circle with the winning horse and driver. Pictured is a 1949 event with Post 54 Commander Andy Palladino presenting a $50 savings bond to Ed Kelly, driver for Fortunate Boy. Share your post's legacy. Upload stories, photos, and videos of your post's history on the Legion's Centennial Celebration website, www.legion.org/centennial. Education. My GI Bill, Veterans in Education by Valerie Hefner. Expanded eligibility for Frye Scholarship. Question: can you tell me if I am eligible for the Marine Gunnery Sergeant John David Frye Scholarship? My husband passed away on active duty in 2003, and I am wondering if I might be eligible for that benefit. Answer: I am so sorry for your loss. You may be eligible to receive the Frye Scholarship. The Veterans Access, Choice, and Accountability Act of 2014 expanded eligibility to surviving spouses of service members who died in the line of duty after September 10, 2001. The scholarship includes full in-state tuition and fees paid to a public school. If you want to attend a private or foreign school, tuition and fees are capped at a maximum amount per year. A monthly housing allowance based on your zip code. A book and supply stipend. 36 months of benefits. To apply for the scholarship, visit vets.gov/education/GI-bill. Honor and Remembrance, Legionnaire Reunites Doughboy's Dog Tag with Family by Tom Gilbert. In 1918, two U.S. soldiers met in war-ravaged France near the American Hospital Center at Vitel-Contrexéville, Department of the Vosges in Lorraine. They were two strangers, young men cast together by the vagaries of modern conflict and the peculiarities of the American Expeditionary Forces. Although they came from similar backgrounds in that they were originally farm boys, Corporal Royce Curry was a nascent mechanic from Alabama, while Corporal William Daggett hailed from Missouri near Kansas City. After he returned from the war, Curry married and had two children. In 1920, he joined the American Legion and helped found a new post in Anniston. He died after a tragic motorcycle accident in 1934. Daggett returned to Missouri, married twice without children, and died in 1953. When Curry died, his wife locked away his trunk with all of his personal mementos, perhaps to hide the pain of his sudden loss so many years before. The trunk was passed on to her daughter, who passed it on to her son, me, Curry's grandson. As a retired Army Lieutenant Colonel and amateur military historian, I was anxious to unlock the trunk's secrets. The trunk contained many World War I items. Most were obvious in their origin and purpose, but one stood out. In the bottom of the trunk was an unusual copper disc, 33 millimeters in diameter, what was originally an 1859 French 10-centime coin of Napoleon III had been smoothed and engraved on one side. The engraving indicated that it was meant to be an ersatz dog tag, possibly to replace one lost in the Lorraine mud. It read, W.H. Daggett, Corporal, Company F, 140 Infantry, 1460834, USA. Also in the trunk were two silver French coins that had been evenly hammered on the edges to create rings. Curry apparently kept busy in his free time by making jewelry from French coins. He'd pound a small brass hammer on a coin's edge until it widened and the diameter was reduced to the size needed for the recipient's finger. When it would fit, he drilled out the center and smoothed the inside edges. As a mechanic, Curry knew how to work with metal and probably made the dog tag for Daggett. I traced Daggett's home of record to Kansas City, Missouri, and received his discharge information from the Missouri Secretary of State's office. He served in the Missouri National Guard with F Company, 140th Infantry. He went overseas on April 25, 1918, and returned to the United States on April 28, 1919. Daggett departed France a couple of months prior to Curry. I believe my grandfather made the ersatz dog tag for Daggett while at Vitel-Contrexéville, but was unable to give it to him before they parted. He felt some attachment and held on to the coin for the rest of his life. Thanks to Ancestry.com, I was able to track down and contact three of Daggett's descendants in March. Of them, Meg Wiley, a great-niece living in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, agreed to be the custodian of Daggett's dog tag. It is fitting that after 100 years, this unique and personal artifact is now in the hands of Daggett's family. Perhaps a couple of ghosts from that faraway but not forgotten war can rest a little easier tonight. Tom Gilbert is a member of Oviedo Memorial American Legion Post 243 in Oviedo, Florida. National Convention Band Contest returns at Minneapolis. After a year's absence, a National Concert Band Contest is returning to the Legion's National Convention. This year, American Legion bands from across the country will face off at 1 p.m. August 25th in the auditorium of the Minneapolis Convention Center. After a tightly contested competition last year in Reno, Nevada, Legion Family Color Guard units are gearing up for the National Color Guard Contest on August 24th. It starts at 5 p.m. in Hall B, Level 1 of the Convention Center, with the Newport Harbor Color Guard defending its championship title. Go online for more information and contest applications. www.legion.org/convention, www.legion.org/convention/contests. Technology, Millennial Metrics, 73% of American millennials, people ages 18 to 34, who prefer to communicate by text message rather than in person. 70% who sleep within arm's length of their cell phones. 62% who would rather forget their wallet than their phone. Memoriam. PNC Cruel remembered for mentoring, listening. American Legion National Commander Denise H. Rohan has fond memories of past National Commander Keith Cruel, who passed away December 28th at 89 in Lancaster, Wisconsin. In particular, Rohan recalls Cruel's humble and unassuming nature. About the same time the Department of Wisconsin endorsed Rohan as a candidate for National Commander, it was marking Cruel's 30th anniversary as National Commander. A few weeks later, his post hosted an event for him that Rohan and her husband Mike attended. "He made a big deal about me being there and how I would be Wisconsin's next National Commander," Rohan said. Immediately after my endorsement, the first letter of congratulations I received was from Keith Cruel. It was a nice note that said how proud he was of me. Cruel, who served as National Commander from 1983 to 1984, was an Army veteran and member of American Legion Post 184 in Fenimore. Cruel also served as Department Commander, National Vice Commander, and Chairman of the National Legislative Commission. As National Commander, Cruel made a point of praising Legionnaires during the organization's work at the post level. "It is the blue cap Legionnaire, with a dedication and zeal unmatched at the grassroots level, who has created and kept alive the dynamic programs for which we are known," he said. "It is you and your families who are the lifeblood of our great organization." Cruel's year also included the 40th anniversary of the signing of the original GI Bill of Rights. He said the occasion was a reminder to every Legionnaire that we are here to serve. The GI Bill provides a standard against which we can measure our efforts. Rohan met Cruel approximately 3 years after his term as National Commander at her first department convention. During lunch, he was looking for a place to sit and noticed Cruel at a table by himself. "I'm guessing he was sitting by himself because everybody thought, you can't sit with a National Commander," Rohan said. "I very sheepishly went over and asked if he minded if I sat with him. He shared with me about going to the White House and meeting the President, testifying, traveling across the United States, the people he met. I'm getting to experience a lot of the same things he shared with me. He was always quiet and seemed to be listening. I never heard him say things like, 'I was National Commander, we should do it this way.' He let people make decisions, but he was always there to help mentor." David Guff, who has served as Wisconsin Department Commander, National Executive Committee Man, and National Vice Commander, said he met Cruel when he became active at the district level. "We became good friends, and he acted as a mentor to me," he said. "As I was running for state offices, Keith always supported me. I saw him just before I was sworn in as National Vice Commander, and he was proud as punch." Cruel is survived by his wife, Dolores, 4 children, 9 grandchildren, and 8 great-grandchildren. Memorial contributions can be made to Fenimore, American Legion Post 184, 960 Lincoln Avenue, Fenimore, Wisconsin, 53809, or to a charity of choice. Steve B. Brooks. The Great War 100, Honor and Remembrance. Rumors are rife. We might not be here very long. Editor's note. Throughout the Great War's centennial, the American Legion magazine will publish excerpts from the letters of D.B. Bernard Ryan of Albion, New York, who served as an Army infantry officer and helped found American Legion Sherritt Post 35 in 1919. Headquarters Company, 309th Infantry, Camp Dix, New Jersey, March 13, 1918. Dear Mother, writing class is a pleasant morning diversion and certainly makes one start the day right. The hour is just a little awkward, however, as I don't really have time for breakfast before going out, and breakfast is finished when I come back. The result is that I eat something before and after the ride, being good for my never-failing appetite. As our horses are as green or greener than we are learning things for both horse and man. The problem of preparing an empty infirmary building for 100 ladies, guests for Friday's dance, was met in large measure today, and the building is more than halfway in readiness. I secured the cooperation of a lieutenant who knew how and was willing, and with 50 men of one of the provisional companies, we rustled over from the storehouse 100 cots, 200 blankets, and 200 comforters, and a number of small tables and shelter halves to use for curtains. I expect it will cause quite a commotion to have 100 women invade the camp and stay for a night or two. March 16, 1918. The dance was a great success, according to everybody. There must have been 150 ladies and 250 officers present at the start, but of course some of the stags thinned out along towards midnight, considering that on Wednesday morning had been done about decorations and that four members of the committee were attending schools and had no time to give to them. The hall surely looked attractive. Rumors are rife, nothing official, and I couldn't repeat it if there was. Better plan to come down here during the spring, as we might not be here very long. My asking for leave at Easter may depend on the duration of the musketry course. Don't count on it. March 23, 1918. As I suggested before, I am tentatively sorting over my personal effects. Have my oil stove crated for shipment to you if you want it. We'll throw out anything that is least ragged, socks and underwear, for instance, and we'll eliminate everything possible. We have been told how much we can take overseas, 250 pounds, and I'm going to try and get under that, as no doubt there will be things to acquire over there. Troops will not wear any OD cotton, so I suppose my half dozen suits will have to be left behind. There are two I have never worn, I think. Well, we will all know a lot more 1 month from now than we do at present. Love, DBR. Personal Finance, USAA. Focus on Finances, by J.J. Montanaro. This year, trade lucky for good. Well, it's good to be lucky. You don't need to be lucky to be good. That's especially true when it comes to managing your money and charting your course to financial freedom. It's highly unlikely, but financial security could come in the form of a lotto win, an unexpected inheritance, or stumbling upon a priceless heirloom at your neighborhood garage sale. Don't pin your hopes on something like that happening. Instead, create your own luck. Here are four ways to do it, and you won't need a lucky clover or a leprechaun to make them work for you. Move money to the top of your agenda. In other words, have regular and purposeful money conversations. Take a moment and think about the money talks you and your significant other have had over the past few months. If you're like most people, you might have discussed a purchase, argued about spending, or if things are going pretty good, just motored on without the topic ever surfacing. Everyone's rhythm is different, but make a point to discuss and agree upon your important financial goals, retirement, kids' college, new house, and your specific plan to do what it takes to make them a reality. Command your day-to-day finances. Luck should have nothing to do with who's in charge of your finances. Do you control your money, or does it control you? Where does it go? Are you directing funds to the goals you've agreed on? Have you got your planned expenses nailed down to the last penny with robust savings in place? Or do you survive each pay period and, if with some luck anything is left over, save a little? A tightly adhered to budget that incorporates the notion of pay yourself first is a key element of making your own luck. Construct a solid wall against the unexpected. When was the last time you updated your legal documents, checked your beneficiaries, reviewed all your insurance coverages to ensure they will make sense in the context of your current situation? Do you have a solid emergency fund in place? These are all building blocks to shield you from financial mishap or ruin. Being good and putting the right plans into place won't let some bad luck derail your finances. Seize time as your ally. I'm blessed to spend a lot of my time speaking with service members and their spouses who are just starting their financial lives. I never miss an opportunity to trumpet the power of time. Believe it or not, I broke out my financial calculator over the holidays to show my own kids how $100 per month could turn into hundreds of thousands. That's the power of time and compounding returns. No matter where you are, today is a much better time to save or save more than 5 or 10 years from now, and everything you're able to save and invest today can make a difference down the road. It's time to stop hoping for something good to happen and make it happen. J.J. Montanaro is a certified financial planner with USAA, the American Legion's preferred provider of financial services. Submit questions for him online, www.legion.org/USAA/focus-on-finances. Membership posts with the most. As of July 31st, Veterans Memorial American Legion Post 347 in Lady Lake, Florida, was the largest post with 6,221 members. The second largest post in the nation also was from Florida, Augustus Ruser, Jr., Post 273 in Madeira Beach, with a membership of 4,144. Third largest was Newport Harbor Post 291 in Newport Harbor, California, with 3,822 members, followed by Apache Post 27 in Apache Junction, Arizona, with 2,574, Oak Orchard, Riverdale, Post 28 in Millsboro, Delaware, with 2,541, and Cyber Incorporated, Post 208 in Orlando, Florida, with 2,270. Verbatim. I didn't know what to do. We all stared at each other. It kind of shows you the world we live in now. Your whole life can change in a second. Charles Howell III, a pro golfer who was in Honolulu for the 2018 Sony Open on January 13th, when an emergency alert was sent to phones throughout Hawaii stating there was an inbound ballistic missile. It was a false alarm sent when an employee pushed the wrong button. The errant message was corrected 38 minutes later. Personal Finance, top-rated states for military retirees. The personal finance website WalletHub recently released findings from a study comparing the 50 states and the District of Columbia for military retiree quality of life. The company's analysts reviewed such factors as job opportunities and access to VA health care. 1. Alaska. 2. South Dakota. 3. Montana. 4. Wyoming. 5. Florida. 6. Maine. 7. New Hampshire. 8. North Dakota. 9. Hawaii. 10. South Carolina. Also among the findings, Alaska has the highest percentage of veterans at 10.1%. Virginia has the lowest percentage of homeless veterans compared to the overall veteran population. New York has the highest number of VA healthcare facilities per number of veterans. Alaska has the highest number of Veterans Benefits Administration offices per number of veterans. South Carolina has the highest percentage of veteran-owned businesses with paid employees.